Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. A quick preview of the docket today. First, a motion to seal filed in the Chad Daybell matter. Shocking. It seems like nobody wants us to know what's going on there anymore. Second, some Johnny Depp video was released and played in court. Is this domestic violence? Well, guess what? I will give you the law so that you can actually make your own decision. Third, what do we know about the suspect in the Orsalia Gall homicide? Should this happen to all drunk guys on a plane? I'm kind of leaning towards yes. An example of that one guy who ruins it for everyone. And has Alec Baldwin been cleared? Vindicated? And we have some death row news for you. A bill in Tennessee wants to make it expensive to harm somebody. Don't spike the brownies. And then finally, our dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. All right, aficionados, you know the drill. Subscribe if you haven't done so already. Like the video, leave me a comment, hit that bell so you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. You'd be surprised how many people say, I didn't get the notification that you went live. Well, you got to make sure you hit the bell. It's probably a Google thing, a YouTube thing. It's not your fault, but just make sure you double check because they always screw it up. And always remember, you can listen to us on your favorite podcasting app by searching Crime Talk with Scott Reich. And also, do not forget, we will be at CrimeCon next week setting up our little exhibit booth. And if you'll be attending, leave me a comment. If you can't attend, we will be going live from the CrimeCon booth all weekend. So make sure that you have your notifications turned on. And guess what? While you're there, you can get some cool Crime Talk merch. Look at this. So you'll be able to get that. And who knows? Maybe you'll even get to take a picture with me if you would like that. It would make my day. All right, before we get to the docket, please support the sponsors that support our channel. Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time. When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high-quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked. All right, today is Thursday, April 22nd, 2022. Let's open the record on the docket. Well, there's been a motion to seal in the Chad Daybell matter. And you say, Scott, what is it? Why does everybody always want to seal everything? Well, it's the prosecution, really. They're the ones that started this nonsense. And I'm a firm believer. I mean, unless we're talking absolute, you know, medical privacy issues or, you know, somebody's tax returns where they have an expectation of privacy, everything else should be open to the public. I'm a firm believer in that. But Mr. Pryor has filed his, get this is a mouthful. He has filed his reply to the state's amended objection and memorandum in response to motion to dismiss indictment. And he's asking that that be sealed. Why? Well, the prosecution wanted it sealed when they did their answer. And then the court said, fine, let's keep them all sealed. It doesn't sound like Mr. Pryor really wants to keep that sealed, but that's what the court required him to do. So that's what he's doing. As you may recall, the original issues regarding the motion to dismiss the indictment had to do with some irregularities as it related to the grand jury proceedings. Obviously, the grand jury proceedings have to be kept secret. People can't discuss their testimony. Unauthorized people cannot be in the grand jury room. And basically, the witnesses can't be tainted by other people's testimony. And those were the allegations that Mr. Pryor was making at the previous proceedings. As you may recall, the government's response was basically, everything was fine, but if it wasn't fine, then it's close enough for government's work, and therefore, judge, no reason to dismiss the indictment whatsoever. Now, let's get realistic. Is the judge going to dismiss the indictment? I would fall over onto my face if the judge dismissed the indictment for grand jury irregularities. I've never seen it done. I've seen a lot of motions filed for it, and really nothing will rise to that level. If there are irregularities, it would be dealt with at the trial court level. Perhaps maybe some type of evidence would not come in, but I wouldn't hold my breath. I think it's a lot of work that's been done. It's a lot of necessary work that needed to be done. But oftentimes what happens when you're on the defense side is you work really hard and nobody looks at your motions until possibly you get to the appellate level. So we'll see what happens. All right, next on the docket, Johnny Depp. Okay. And I get it. There are people that think that Johnny Depp can do no wrong. And everybody thinks that Ms. Heard is an absolutely horrible person. I know neither of them. I like Johnny Depp. I think he's a good actor. Frankly, I never heard of Ms. Heard until all this stuff came about. Wouldn't know that she was famous. Wouldn't know a single thing about what she was in as an actress. But I took a little heat the other day. What I'm saying is that neither party here comes with clean hands, okay? It looks like they could both dish it out. So there's a video that was played in court yesterday, and it's been released, and it's Johnny Depp's kitchen rampage against Amber Heard. And this video, as you can see, shows Johnny Depp slamming cabinets, pouring wine, saying he's going to go crazy. Now, Amber secretly recorded the video and is asking him questions on what has him so upset. He replies, "Did something happen to you this morning? I don't think so. You want to see crazy? I'll give you crazy. Here's your crazy." Then Depp smashes a glass in the middle of his rant and pours himself a big glass of red wine before noticing that the device is recording. Depp was asked about the video in court, saying, "Being illegally recorded by your chosen other is quite fitting with the rest of the photographs," referring to other photographs and exhibits presented in court, which don't paint Depp in a very appealing light because it looks like he's basically passed out from drugs and alcohol. Depp admitted to assaulting a couple of cabinets, but said he didn't hit Amber during the incident. Well, that seems to be the biggest thing that people get really excited about for Mr. Depp, is he never hit her. Never hit her. Okay, I want to give you the law, and then I want to give you the example of what the law can, how ridiculous it can become, okay? And nobody deserves to be the victim of domestic violence, whether it be male or female. So let me give you the definition, and it may vary a little bit in each state, but this is a general definition that goes pretty similar throughout. It says, domestic violence means an act or threatened act of violence upon a person with whom the actor has been involved in an intimate relationship. Intimate relationship means exactly what it means. Okay, we all know that. And the definition usually goes on. It says domestic violence also includes any other crime against a person or against property, including an animal, or any municipal ordinance violation against a person or against property, including an animal, when used as a method. This is the important part. This is the important part. Pay close attention. When used as a method of coercion, control, punishment, intimidation, or revenge directed against a person with whom the actor is or has been involved in an intimate relationship. Okay? So one could argue that this video could potentially be an act of domestic violence. If you are going around somewhat slamming cupboards, and could it be for intimidation, revenge, punishment, control? Guess what? That is and can be domestic violence. Let me give you an example of a case I had many, many years ago. A couple had an argument and the homes were close together. And somebody out of concern called and said that they had heard a couple arguing. They asked the police to come and check on them. And the police arrived and the couple was inside. They had no real idea why the police would have been called or what was going on because there were no punches thrown. There were no acts of physical violence that had taken place. And guess what? The police separated everybody and said, hey, is anything going on? No, no, it's all good. We were just having a friendly marital argument about money. Okay, there was an argument about who should write and control the money, write the checks for the bills every month. And it comes out that says the police officers asked, was anything thrown? And one of the individuals said, well, yeah, basically, like I said, if you didn't like the way I wrote the checks or paid the bills, then you could handle it. And they literally flicked the checkbook across the table in front of the other person. Guess what? That individual was arrested. That individual was arrested for harassment, doing anything with the intent to harass, annoy, alarm, intimidate, anything along those lines can be domestic violence. A lot of people seem to be getting the notion that unless somebody actually touches and punches or slaps somebody, that there is no domestic violence. I would beg to differ. Ladies and gentlemen, that is not what the law is in any jurisdiction that I am aware about. It's only domestic violence if you punch her or if she punches you. No, anything. And it doesn't even have to be against the person. If you've been involved in an intimate relationship and you see your ex-boyfriend or girlfriend's car and you key that car because that ex-boyfriend or girlfriend was just not a nice person, guess what? That is a domestic violence. Even though you're no longer together, but you had been in the past engaged in an intimate relationship, that is a domestic violence. And remember, the crime, the underlying crime is the crime. Domestic violence is a sentencing enhancer that if the court finds it or the jury finds it, it basically means you get the domestic violence tagline, which has significant collateral consequences, one of which can own potentially firearms. And it's a kind of a big deal, okay? So it doesn't play out in civil court, but the definitions are going to be the same. So for everybody who thinks that Johnny Depp never did anything wrong, I think this video could be argued, I'm not saying it is, could be argued that that is domestic violence, an act of domestic violence. And like I said, neither party has clean hands, and no one should be touched by anybody. They should just be nice to everybody, okay? Next on the docket, Orsalia Gall. What do we know about the suspect? Well, the handyman who is charged with the murder of the Queen's mom, Orsalia Gall, is reportedly a married father of two who would leave, and I'm using the words creepy, love notes for baristas at the local Starbucks. Now, David Bonella was a regular at the Austin Street coffee shop in Queens. He left a barista so startled by his advances that the woman called the police on him numerous times. According to these baristas, he was creepy. He stalked people. It was known. Everyone knew he was weird, especially in the Starbucks there on Austin Street, said the former Starbucks workers. People stated that he would leave love notes and write songs about the women and leave them in a tip jar at the coffee shop. He even has went as far as proposing to two of the women. Now, the 44-year-old suspect would frequently proposition female workers, handing them a note and a piece of jewelry, and he asked them to be with him quite frequently. It's reported that he would ask the workers, specifically the female workers, very personal questions. How old were they? When was their birthday? Where they went to school? Where they lived? The barista said they were speechless to hear the news and said that each time they called the police on Bonilla, that he would be gone by the time the police showed up. A spokesperson for the New York Police Department said there are harassment complaints on file at that particular location, but nothing matches the employee's recent claims. Bonella allegedly started seeing Gall after doing several handyman jobs at her family home in Queens, just days before she was stabbed to death by Bonella. Now, Gall left herself a note on the fridge that says, get a new handyman. Boy, is that not the understatement of the century, right? Bonala came to the United States from Mexico roughly 21 years ago and appears to have been what he purports to be an aspiring filmmaker who say that he was a student at the New York School of Interior Design. However, they have no record of him. It also appears as though he is not a lawful permanent resident in the United States as well. We'll continue to follow that one because it's just weird. All right, next. Should this happen to every drunk guy on a plane? I certainly say I wish we could. Okay, there's a video of former heavyweight champion Mike Tyson punching a man on the JetBlue plane this past week. Now, the victim is this guy named Melvin Townsend, and it's learned he apparently has a lengthy criminal record. Townsend has been convicted of fraud, grand theft, burglary, possession of controlled substances, and trafficking and stolen property. Now, the 36-year-old broke onto property in 2018 and stole a trailer that he hitched to his pickup truck, and the drug possession was for oxycodone. He served time twice, once for 20 months and another for 15 months. Now, it appears that Townsend was apparently harassing Tyson when they boarded the plane from San Francisco to Miami. And before taking off, Townsend, who was sitting behind Tyson, was hounding Mr. Tyson, and Mr. Tyson's team claims that Townsend threw a water bottle at him. Well, Mike Tyson then snapped and unloaded a few good punches, leaving Townsend faced a little bloodied over here on his corner, right there. Needless to say, both men were escorted off the plane by police. Townsend said he did not want to press charges and they were going to go free. Unbelievable. Only in California does the state not prosecute anybody. Didn't happen to Will Smith. Didn't happen to Mike Tyson either. Now, I listened to Mike Tyson the other day on the podcast with Joe Rogan. He seems to have matured a lot over the years. Obviously, he had lots of trouble. But generally, if I had to sit as a judge in front of him, I would say you probably can't beat people up, even if they do throw a water bottle at you. However, you never know. Maybe there's something we don't know. But the reality of it is, if it was a perfect world, that would happen to every drunk guy on a plane. I think it would keep the drunk guys on a plane to a minimum. But let's make clear, the law says you can't go around punching people unless you're defending yourself if you're in fear of death or serious bodily harm. And where was the flight attendant during all of this? Really? And frankly, the guy, he almost looked happy that he got beat up. And I'm sure he'll be suing Mike Tyson any day now. All right. Everybody knows this one guy, all right? This one guy that ruins everything for everyone, right? Well, in this particular case, it just happens to be a Georgia prosecutor. And what was he doing that ruined it for everyone? Well, he was showing his gun to a colleague when it went off inside a courthouse in East Georgia. Now, the 42-year-old assistant district attorney was injured by the unintentional discharge, whereupon he was shooting himself in the upper leg. Now, deputies wrote that in their incident report, and the unnamed assistant deputy district attorney was in a fellow prosecutor's office when the two struck up a conversation about his guns. His colleague said he was thinking of buying a SIG Model 320 handgun. Now, the assistant DA replied that he just happened to be carrying the exact gun. As he took the weapon out of his holster to show it off, it discharged. Now, his colleague said he initially thought the ADA was kidding and shot at the floor, but that was not the case. The prosecutor looked at him and said, "I just shot myself." Another prosecutor heard the gunshot and offered to call 911. The DA objected, not knowing the extent of his injuries. He collapsed a short time after. Investigators eventually made it to the scene and saw an intermediate-sized piece of human tissue and bloodstain on the floor. The gun was taken into evidence and later returned. The ADA told investigators that he believed the gun's trigger got caught on a button on his jacket. Now, the sheriff has since closed the case, and they don't expect any charges to be filed. Well, just a little note of interest here. The Sig Sauer P320 is a firearm that has extensive litigation for just going off. Interesting, I must say. But this ADA thinks maybe he pulled the trigger by catching it on his jacket. Don't think so. But guess what? You know who can't take firearms into government buildings? That's right. Everyday citizens. And it's always, always the guys on the prosecution side that screw it up for everybody else. They get to take their guns in, right? Because they're law enforcement, but yet none of us can. And they'll probably cite to this incident why they can't have guns in government offices, because they can go off, where the assistant district attorney shot himself. Just want you to think about it, ladies and gentlemen, the hypocrisy of it all. Hey, was Alec Baldwin exonerated? I don't know that, but that's what he's saying. He's saying that the occupational safety report released by the New Mexico authorities completely exonerates him from the deadly shooting set on the film Rust. Now, Baldwin posted the statement on his Instagram saying, "We are grateful to the New Mexico Occupational Health and Safety Bureau for investigating this matter. We appreciate the report that exonerates Mr. Baldwin by making clear that he believed the gun held only dummy rounds." Now, the statement continues, "Additionally, the report recognizes that Mr. Baldwin's authority on the production was limited to approving script changes and creative casting, and Mr. Baldwin had no authority over the matters that were the subject of the Bureau's findings of violations, and we are pleased that the New Mexico officials have clarified these critical issues. We are confident that the individual in the report will be held accountable for the tragedy." Now, Mr. Baldwin's post did seem to gloss over the next sentence in the report, which read as follows: "Alec Baldwin's handled the revolver and fired the round that struck and injured Helena Hutchins and Joel Souza. The New Mexico authorities levied a maximum fine of, get this, $136,793. Doesn't seem like a whole lot of money. And that's against the Rust Movie Production LLC, which is probably broke, so doesn't have any money anyway. The penalty was a result of the willful and serious violations, and the press release by the New Mexico OSHA board basically said Rust Movie Productions LLC failed to follow what the state called clear national guidelines for firearms safety. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Exonerated or not exonerated? Guess what? It's an administrative finding. It doesn't necessarily mean the criminal charges could not be forthcoming, but let's be honest. The longer it goes, the less likely any charges will in fact be filed. But think about it. If you were in your house holding a gun that even if you thought it was empty and it just went off, do you think you'd be charged? Even if you said, "I thought it was empty," they'd say that you were negligent, and they would say that you were criminally negligent. Just something to think about. All right, on this Friday, how about a little Death Row news? I know it sounds like a record label, but it's not. Let's talk some Death Row. Okay, so the Death Row's oldest inmate has had his execution stopped at the last minute because of a mistake in the preparation of the lethal injection. Okay, seriously, can you imagine this? There's probably one guy that had one thing to do to get everything that they needed correct, right? And they messed it up. You had one thing. Imagine whole Oscar Smith, the oldest living death row inmate at 72. He was supposed to be killed on Thursday in Tennessee's first execution since the pandemic began, and had even had his last meal of a double bacon cheeseburger and apple pie. Well, then the Tennessee governor, Bill Lee, granted a temporary reprieve from Smith, who was convicted of the 1989 killing of his estranged wife and her two teenage sons, after what he called an oversight in the preparation of the lethal injection. Now, the governor didn't elaborate on what exactly forced the stop, but an attorney with the Federal Public Defender's Office representing Smith said the issue was a mishandling of the drugs. Another attorney from the Federal Public Defender's Office called for an independent entity to investigate, saying no execution should happen until questions were answered. The governor also did the right thing by stopping the execution, which would certainly have had torturous results for Mr. Smith, according to his attorneys. And the United States Supreme Court denied the last hour bid by Smith's attorney for a stay shortly before the governor intervened. His reprieve is in effect until the beginning of June. And the Department of Corrections personnel said the state Supreme Court would need to reschedule the execution. And she said that Mr. Smith would be removed from death watch and returned to death row. I mean, whether you have opinions or no opinions on the death penalty, but could you imagine basically being told, you're going to go die. Here's your last meal. And then it's like, oh, stop. Don't. I mean, that's, think about what was going through his mind. Jeez. I bet it wasn't. Gee, I guess that means I get another double cheeseburger and apple pie. I don't know. In some more death penalty news, the South Carolina Supreme Court has hit pause on the April 29th execution of a gentleman by the name of Richard Moore. He was scheduled to die by firing squad. Okay. Now, Mr. Moore was scheduled to be the first person executed in South Carolina since 2011. And the court said it has put a temporary stay that will release a more detailed order with a new parameter at a later date. How did this all come about? Well, the South Carolina Department of Corrections said it received an execution date from the state's Supreme Court for Brad Keith Simon, a 64-year-old Greenville County man who was sentenced to death for the 2001 killing of his ex-girlfriend's parents. Now, Sigmund's execution date is set for May 13th. By law, Sigmund will be asked to choose how he would prefer to die, 14 days before his May 13th execution date, or April 29th. Well, without the option of lethal injection, Simon faces two choices: death by the 110-year-old electric chair or death by the state's newly installed firing squad. So Old Sparky or firing squad. It's kind of like Burger King. You can have it your way, right? Sigmund is the latest prisoner in South Carolina to be issued an execution date after the new law that makes electrocution the default method of execution. And the General Assembly passed the law in 2021 after the South Carolina Department of Corrections said it had been unable to procure drugs needed for lethal injection. Moore received his execution date earlier this month, and now the Supreme Court said that the execution was stayed temporarily. And his upcoming execution attracted national attention, in large part because the execution by firing squad is rare. Only three other states offer inmates a choice: Utah, Oklahoma, and Mississippi. And in a press conference, the governor indicated he would uphold Moore's death sentence if the issue had come before him. And when an inmate who is condemned to die runs out of court appeals, a state governor is usually the last opportunity for reprieve, usually changing a death sentence to a life sentence or a prison to life in prison. The governor, however, said the death penalty serves a worthwhile purpose for families of those killed, and the attorneys have also challenged the state's contention that the option of lethal injection is unavailable, leaving inmates to choose between being shot or electrocuted. Attorneys for the South Carolina Department of Corrections say that defendants in the case argued that inmates are not entitled to choose their preferred method of execution beyond what the state allows. And last week, a Richland County court judge agreed to a request by Mr. Moore's lawyer to closely examine those claims that the South Carolina Department of Corrections cannot secure lethal injection drugs, leaving only Old Sparky, the electric chair, and the firing squad as the only option for capital punishment. This decision means Moore and three other South Carolinians on death row can move forward with a case that could get South Carolina's new firing squad and Old Sparky declared unconstitutional. That brings up lots of issues, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, under the Fifth Amendment, the government cannot take your life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And they've had due process of law. They've gone through trials, appeals, habeas proceedings, you name it. They've had it all. So under the law of the United States, they can be executed, but it can't be in violation of the Eighth Amendment, which is cruel and unusual punishment. Is it cruel and unusual punishment to be electrocuted? Well, I don't know. I don't think, well, that didn't exist at the founding of our country, and firearms weren't exactly that prevalent. They were there, but you know, they were usually done by hanging. Is that an option? I don't know. Let me know what you think about in the options. That's a hot topic everybody wants to talk about, and nobody thinks about it really until, well, these issues come up. Like, what do you mean we can't get the drugs? That's right. The pharmaceutical companies won't give them the multiple items needed to make up the concoction because they don't want to be a part of it. Good, bad, who knows? All right, next. Tennessee bill wants to make it very expensive if you harm somebody. So a bill in Tennessee that would require drunk drivers who kill the parent of a minor to pay child support unanimously passed the state Senate on Wednesday. And the bill requires anyone convicted of vehicular homicide due to intoxication or aggravated vehicular homicide when the victim is a parent of a minor child to pay restitution for each child until they are 18 and have graduated high school. The bill is known as the Bentley's Law after a child in Missouri whose parents were killed in an accident involving a drunk driver. Cecilia Williams is now raising her orphan grandchildren and has advocated for the bill. Lacey Newton, 25, her fiancé, Cordell Williams, and their four-month-old son, Cordell Sean Michael Williams, were killed back in April of 2020 when they were rear-ended, forcing the vehicle off the road and into a tree where it caught fire. Now, David Gross Thursby was charged with driving while intoxicated. It was amended before passage to the named Ethan Haley's and Bentley's Law to include the children of Tennessee officer Nicholas Gallinger, who was killed in 2019 by a hit-and-run drunk driver. And drunk driving accidents account for about 30% of all traffic fatalities on the road, and it is actually very, very preventable because who can't take an Uber? Who can't just wait it out? Have somebody come pick them up. It's a very simple choice that can be made. I'm sure at some point that bill will have constitutional challenges because why just DUI laws? Why not make it anyone that you kill that you should be responsible for paying restitution for the upbringing of their innocent children? We'll see. I'm not sure that one's going to pass muster for a while. Next on the docket, don't spike the brownies. Okay, so I guess in honor of 420 the other day, a stone bride and her unknown husband have been charged with spiking guests' food at their wedding reception in Orlando, Florida. Several guests apparently became ill after eating the Italian-inspired menu that was laced with marijuana. The bride, Dana Sabota, is seen smirking and struggling to speak as the cops and her husband are being questioned about the food. The bride and the caterer's plot was revealed after several of the guests were taken to the hospital in a panic. Some apparently got quite sick, and others had their hearts racing out of control. The bride is seen staring at the officer in the body cam video, blinking but not saying anything. Her husband, Andrew, handled the situation, offering that some of his guests may have brought their own supply of edibles to the wedding. After the police informed the newlyweds that some of their guests are being transported to the hospital, Andrew seems to grow a little more worried. Apparently, the incident all began with dinner when the guests chowed down on meatballs, lasagna, Caesar salad, tortellini and bread, and an olive oil herb dip. Soon, guests started to feel tingly and noticed their hearts racing. One said he had crazy thoughts while another had to be sedated in the hospital because she was unruly. Now, a guest by the name of Miranda Cady said that she thought she was going to die. According to the arrest warrant, every guest tested for cannabis showed positive results, and none who were interviewed by police said they knew that their food had been laced with marijuana. The guest said that the bride acted as if she had given them a gift when asked if there was drugs in the food. Don't spike food, ladies and gentlemen. That's a crime. They're going to be charged with assault. Like, seriously, you can't dope people up without their consent. That's one wedding people will never forget. All right, our dumb criminal quickly recap, and then our contestant for the day. Monday, the whipped cream pie thrower in Greenville, North Carolina, terrorized the city with his desserts that he was throwing in people's face. Tuesday, John Castor and his little dog broke into a Red Wing restaurant in Groveland, Florida, and stole peach cobbler, a piece of lava cake, and a large tub of vanilla ice cream. Wednesday, Gabriel Mendoza and Steve Jerome stole a speed warning trailer that belonged to the Russell County Sheriff's Office in Alabama. Fortunately, the police were able to track the trailer down because they just simply had to see where their GPS monitor was located. And Thursday, Catherine Mardish ran out of gas and abandoned her car in Tennessee. The police went to tow the car and found 229 pounds of marijuana inside a duffel bag. full of money. I don't know what's dumber, giving people their food filled with drugs or leaving all of your drugs and money in the car that's going to be towed. And today, a Florida man was behind on his payments for his Ford F-250 truck. A tow truck pulled up to repo the truck, and Johanna Lopez hopped in the car to retrieve some personal items. The tow truck driver saw Lopez get into his truck and begin filming with his phone. Lopez then fires up the truck and steps on the gas, and in an unsuccessful attempt to free the truck from the tow truck, Lopez's truck makes some snapping and grinding noises, and by the end of the video, the truck's rear end is a hot mess. The car made it to the ground, but could not free itself from the safety chains of the tow truck. Mr. Lopez was arrested shortly thereafter. He is facing grand theft and criminal mischief charges. Imagine being charged with stealing your own truck. Well, that's what happens. That's what happens when somebody goes and repos it. Think about it, ladies and gentlemen. Be smart, right? It's like your Friday afternoon briefing. Don't contribute to the population. Don't decrease from the population. Just be smart, okay? It's your Friday afternoon briefing. All right, thanks for watching. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you next week on Crime Talk.